Hi, podcast listeners. It's Chris Boyd. On KERA Radio, we're busy hosting our winter membership campaign. It's one of the few times each year when we ask listeners to support the programming that KERA provides by making financial contributions to the station. Well, we've decided to experiment with cutting those pitch breaks from the podcast. You won't hear the phone number and wonder if anyone is actually standing by at that very moment to take your call. But we would still really appreciate it if you are able to contribute. Your donation goes to support all the programming you hear on KERA, including our streaming service. And most importantly, it pays for this podcast so that you can listen to Think wherever you are in the world, whenever you are in time. You can make your contribution online at kera.org. It only takes a minute. In fact, you could do it while listening to this podcast. Thanks for listening to Think. Here's today's show.
Funding for Think is provided by SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How has the Catholic Church concealed shameful truths within the walls of the Vatican, and how has that culture of secrecy affected the lives of the faithful around the world? While many Catholics and non-Catholics alike have been impressed by the apparent openness and simplicity practiced by Pope Francis, the pontiff clearly has his work cut out for him as he seeks to purge the hierarchy of those more interested in personal power, wealth, and impunity than in preaching the Gospels and comforting the afflicted. A new Frontline documentary airing tomorrow will make clear just how wide-ranging the Vatican's problems are, from the much-publicized child abuse scandals to a culture within the city-state of sexual promiscuity despite the official requirement of priestly celibacy, to questionable holdings of church funds and shady dealings within the Vatican Bank. Filmmaker Anthony Thomas directed Secrets of the Vatican, which airs Tuesday, February 25th on KERA Channel 13 television. Anthony, welcome to Think.
Thank you very much.
First of all, how has Pope Francis shown himself to be different from his predecessors from the beginning?
Well, from the beginning, starting very simply with his personality, he's somebody who relates so easily to people. He's somebody who's so comfortable with people. And he's taken already some very, very important steps, some of them symbolic. I mean, he's refused to live in the Apostolic Palace, preferring to live in one of the residences for visiting priests and clergy. But he has achieved a great deal in his handling of the Vatican Bank, which was fraudulently involved with all kinds of things. He has appointed a committee of eight cardinals drawn from countries across the world to help reform the Curia. He's had a very, very outstanding first year. And, of course, he has been recognized as a major figure.
And just today we heard the announcement that there's been a newly formed Vatican Economy Council, which includes not only members of the clergy, but also lay people.
That's right. I mean, but that is one of many moves. I mean, he started on the Vatican Bank almost within weeks of being elected pope. He had appointed a commission to investigate what was going on there.
And yet, as you make clear in the documentary, 8 years before Pope Francis, Pope Benedict had also promised a new beginning for the institution. What sort of approach did Benedict take to trying to purify the church?
Well, he right from the start, he used very, very strong language, talked about the filth that's in the church. And he was finally overwhelmed by events. This is the tragedy. I mean, Benedict was a very pious man, a very decent man, a very shy man, but somebody who wasn't capable of administering in the way that is necessary to get things done and to change things. And I think his final years were very sad and very tragic. I mean, he wanted to have reform, for instance, in the Vatican Bank, but he was outmaneuvered by others, particularly his deputy, Cardinal Bertone. The will was there, and he was genuinely shocked by child abuse and apologized again and again, but was not able to take the major steps that were necessary.
I hadn't realized that he had no pastoral experience under his belt, which is something that, I mean, there's an administrative component, obviously, to being pope, but there's more to it than just that.
Yes, I mean, he was a priest, a parish priest for just 1 year at a time when he was studying for a doctorate and was being very sort of withdrawn from parish life. And then he was appointed a bishop, but again, very, very little dealing with people on the ground, and that was a serious limitation.
This documentary is also a peek inside the Vatican, which has kept itself secret for a long time. It is a sovereign state. It can't be compelled to turn over documents to other legal authorities and that sort of thing. And it's a reminder that just as in any, I suppose, hierarchy or bureaucracy, there is the Pope at the top, but people like Cardinal Bertone and other people within the Church have a great deal of power in the Vatican.
That's right. And there are definite competing factions there, which is very dangerous.
Okay, so we have the disturbing story here of Father Marcel Maciel of Mexico. To the outside world, and indeed to the Vatican, he looked like this rising star who could recruit large numbers of boys and young men into the Legionnaires of Christ and also raise vast sums of money for the Church. But those who knew him well tell a very different story. Can you tell us about Father Maciel?
Yes, of course. Father Maciel was a man with extraordinary powers of money-raising powers. He came from a well-connected family in Mexico, the Catholic elite in Mexico, and but he had this dark secret, and he was from the late 50s. There were suspicions that he was abusing young seminarians, but he wasn't touched, and his power and his status grew and grew. In 1994 and in 2004, there were massive celebrations of the 50th and 60th anniversaries of his ordination. The Pope himself, John Paul, embraced him publicly, described him as an efficacious guide to youth. But all the time, it was known that there was this dark side. And it was a really terrible situation of concealment and failure to act.
Please continue, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, and then the final thing, of course, was when it was discovered that not only had he abused dozens of young boys, but he had abused, formed relationship with two young girls and fathered children by them. And one of his sons, by one of those relationships, he had also abused. And it's just incredible that this could go on. And this could be reported again and again and again, and no action was taken.
You have an interview in the film with one of Maciel's sons, and it is really, it is so evident, even as he's speaking in Spanish, his pain at just recalling these events in his life.
Yeah, it is. It's quite awful. I mean, you know, people may say, oh, but we've heard all about the sex scandals before. You know, it's misleading to suggest that this is something that's just gone away. It's over the Benedict period, it became an international problem. 27 countries were reporting these sort of cases. It's not an issue of the past. But also what I was trying to do in the film, in the interviews with victims, was to go a little bit beyond the shock of the abuse to take this much further. I mean, one of them describes how, you know, how extraordinarily different it must be to be molested or raped by a priest than, say, some civilian truck driver or something like that, because you're taught that the priest is between you and God. Mm. It's so important. And when it's devastating when they cross over the line like that. And this is why I felt it was important to raise this, first of all, that the issue hasn't gone away, but secondly, to have a little bit of understanding of what it is like for the victim.
At one point in the day, Father Effinger said he needed help in the church with candles. And my father said, go help him. And we went into the church where he assaulted me for a period of time and ultimately ended up raping me. While he was raping me, I didn't understand what was happening. I just knew there was this incredible pain and I could hardly breathe. And I kept praying that God would just let me die. And when he finished, He stood up and he looked at me and he said, "If you tell anybody what you did, they won't believe you. And if you tell anybody, your parents will burn in hell." And then he gave me penance to do.
That was a now grown woman named Monica Barrett who says she was assaulted by her priest when she was 8 years old. And I suppose, Anthony, that's an example of what you were trying to do here in explaining why abuse by a clergy member is indeed on a different level than many other kinds of sexual abuse.
Oh, it is, yeah. Because your trust in that person is total, and it's part of your faith. It gets right to the heart of your beliefs. And when you're asked to do penance and made to feel that you are guilty for the act, that's terrible.
And many people over the years who tried to come forward have reported really feeling not only not cared for by the church, but stonewalled by the church.
Yeah. And we deal with that as well. I mean, and the Milwaukee case is a whole other chapter, but, you know, the people, hundreds of people who still haven't been properly compensated.
We'll take a quick break here, and we'll talk about the Milwaukee case in a few minutes. My guest is filmmaker Anthony Thomas. He directed the Frontline special Secrets of the Vatican, which airs Tuesday, February 25th on KERA Channel 13 television. If you'd like to be part of this conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372, send email to think@kera.org, or send me a tweet at Chris Boyd Think.
Funding for Think is provided by SMU Summer Youth, with more than 30 new programs for students entering kindergarten through 12th grade at SMU in Plano from June through August. Registration opens March 5th at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with filmmaker Anthony Thomas, who directed the Frontline special Secrets of the Vatican, which will air Tuesday, February 25th on KERA Channel 13 television. If you want to be part of the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or email think@kera.org. So, Anthony, for people who are not familiar with how a Catholic Church hierarchy is set up, there are districts called dioceses, which are presided over typically by a bishop. In some cases, as in Milwaukee, these dioceses have been sued by victims of child sex abuse, but they could not receive the funds they were awarded in court because that money was essentially protected by the church.
That's right. What's happened in Milwaukee was that the diocese sought permission to transfer $57 million out of the diocesan funds into a cemetery fund. Why that was needed to maintain seven cemeteries, which were beautifully maintained as it was, but it enabled the church to declare bankruptcy and then not to be in a position to compensate victims.
What evidence is there that sexual abuse has been a known problem within the church for a long time?
Well, I'm told there's evidence that goes back to the 4th century. I haven't seen it, but I've been told by historians. It's not a new phenomenon at all. What is new is what's happened in the late 20th century and early 21st century where all this has come to light. That is a new development. But this is something that has a long history.
Now, in recent years, the church seems to have tried to screen out seminary candidates who might be gay, but there does not appear to be any evidence that being either gay or straight made any individual any more or less likely to attack children.
That's true. If we're talking about pedophilia, if we're talking about sexually abusing a child, then the evidence, according to Dr. Kafka, who is one of the consultants and who appears in the film, is that it's immaterial, whether it's a heterosexual or a homosexual inclination. The abuse is divided across the two. Where it becomes different, when we're talking about a child, where it becomes different is post-pubertal. In other words, abusing a boy of 14 or 15, that that is homosexual abuse. Likewise, with a girl of that age, it's heterosexual abuse. But as far as pedophilia, literally the abuse of children is concerned, there's no evidence to suggest that it's more likely to be somebody who's gay or not gay.
Are there theories as to why Catholic clergymen have been accused so much more frequently of sexual abuse than their Protestant counterparts?
Yes, I mean, this is a complex subject with many, many factors, but I think we can say that at the root of the problem are a number of things. First of all, it is the vow of celibacy. Secondly, and very, very important, because this aspect is now changing, but until recently, people would go into seminary at the age of 11, 12, or the end of high school, and given no sex education whatsoever. So I don't want to become too graphic, but they had to deal with the problems that they had without any sense of, you know, the first wet dream, and it felt like some terrible sin. They didn't know what it was. This has caused such mental confusion. Now, I'm very glad to say, the movement is much more to accept seminarians in their middle 20s, when they've had experience of life, when they can make that vow of celibacy, knowing that they can keep it based on their own experiences, which is very, very much safer.
Hmm.
But the vow of celibacy is a problem. And this very much new approach towards people entering seminary at a much later age, time of their life, is very, very important.
Now, I want to say the film takes pains to acknowledge that there are plenty of priests who have stayed to their vow of celibacy, who have not abused anyone, who have absolutely followed through on their vow. So we, by no means, you are not saying that this is universal within the church.
Not at all.
On the other hand, there are some stunning allegations in this film about some clergy within the Vatican itself completely ignoring their vows of celibacy. Can you talk about the journalist who went undercover to find evidence of this?
Yes, this was Carmelo Abate, who's a very distinguished journalist and author. And he had never considered that this sort of thing was going on, but a family friend of his was gay, and he described to Carmelo the experience he'd had, the sexual experience he'd had with a priest, and he went on to say that this priest is holding a party in one of the sort of gay haunts next Saturday, and Carmelo couldn't believe his ears, so he said, "Can I come along?" And Carmelo posed as, I mean, Carmelo's heterosexual, he's got kids of his own, but he posed as this man's lover and went with a hidden camera. And most of the people in that gay gathering were priests. But what was particularly shocking to Carmelo was what happened afterwards. They went back to his friend's apartment, and the host priest went into a room with one of his lovers. And the next morning, Carmelo stayed in a separate room. The next morning when he woke up, this French priest who was the host had put on all his vestments and started taking Mass. Hmm. And for Carmelo, who's a devout Catholic, this blasphemy was just unbelievable. And we include that sequence in the film.
Someone says in the film, the Catholic Church essentially invented Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yes, yes. That's I don't know if that's an exaggeration, but it's certainly how it functions in the Vatican particularly. These matters are not discussed. And, I mean, I came across one parish in Rome, I didn't include it in the film, where the priest in charge had his male lover, and the congregation were treated them like a married couple with great respect. It's an extraordinary world, Rome. Hmm. You come across all kinds of situations that you never imagined before.
Well, if people within the Vatican might be failing to fulfill their vows of celibacy, whether it be in heterosexual relationships or homosexual relationships, why has there been no serious discussion of changing that rule and making celibacy an optional vow for priests?
That goes right to the root of their belief. And what is so strange, of course, is that celibacy was not introduced until the 13th century. The Catholic Church for the first 1,000 years permitted its priests to marry. And it was introduced for very unholy reasons. It was introduced because the church was losing property, because property was being willed to children instead of back to the center. I think it's one of the last things to go. It's held on to so tightly. And I think it is a tremendous problem, because I think if you, quite apart from Shenang, you know, what was going on in bars and so forth, which is one extreme, a parish priest who has to deal with marital problems has to advise couples, or couples who are having difficulties with their children or anything like that, you know, that's not had any experience of marriage, who's not had any experience of bringing up children, I think that weakens his position considerably.
Hmm. Well, it does seem that it would be easier to sublimate one's desire to will property to one's children than to sublimate all human sexuality.
It's a very good point. Yeah, exactly.
But I haven't been put in that position, but it's just an interesting thing to consider. All right, let's talk about this, because when you talk about, you know, this, the vow of celibacy being put in place because property was being willed away from the church, that boils down to money. Tell us about the Vatican Bank.
Well, it's an extraordinary institution. It was founded in the 1940s. The perfectly proper business of getting money to foundations and to parishes and archdioceses and so forth. But it's been used for all kinds of nefarious practices. And every now and then it makes headlines and then it sort of fades away. Because it has been used for money laundering, there are very suspicious accounts there, including the Iranian embassy in Rome. And it is used for money laundering, it's used for tax evasion, all this stuff has been going on. And it only became difficult for the Vatican Bank when, during the European financial crisis, very strict rules were laid down for all banks in Europe. And this meant that the Vatican Bank had to comply, had to be open, had to expose its transactions and answer questions that were raised. And they resisted and they resisted and they resisted. In 2010, because of one transaction that they couldn't provide any background to, that money was frozen by the Bank of Italy. And this institution, Pope Benedict really wanted reform. He really wanted to change, but he had other cardinals who worked against him. But thankfully, Francis has now really taken charge in a big way. He appointed a commission within a few weeks of being elected Pope to shake up the bank. 900 accounts have already been, you know, stopped, and more is happening. So I think its days as a very dubious institution are drawing to an end.
There's this sort of poignant moment in the film where you report that Pope Benedict actually learned of the expulsion of the person he had appointed to reform the Vatican Bank on television, was taken completely aback by this, and this happened at the hands of Cardinal Bertone, and the Pope actually cried. Pope Benedict cried to learn this.
I was quite cautious of that statement, but I spoke later to interviewed the journalist that said that. And I said, in complete confidence, or she said, my source was with Benedict at the time. And I said, in complete confidence, would you please give me the name of your source? And she did. And, of course, it goes no further than me. Mm-hmm. But that was a true incident, yes, that he had appointed this man. Here was a man who had banking experience, who was a professor in business ethics, who went in there to try to change things. And that little cabal around Bertone got rid of him. And, and Benedict heard the announcement on television. It was extraordinary.
My guest is filmmaker Anthony Thomas. He directed the Frontline special Secrets of the Vatican, which airs Tuesday, February 25th on KERA Channel 13 Television. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think is provided by SMU Summer Youth, with more than 30 new programs for students entering kindergarten through 12th grade at SMU in Plano from June through August. Registration opens March 5th at smu.edu/summeryouth.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. We're speaking this hour with filmmaker Anthony Thomas, who directed the Frontline special Secrets of the Vatican. You can see it on Tuesday, February 25th on KERA Channel 13 Television. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, call us at 1-800-933-5372 or send email to think@kera.org. So, Anthony, there are people both within the hierarchy of the church and outside it who desperately want to see reforms. Can you tell us about VatiLeaks and what came of that?
Yes, that was extraordinary. There's a man called Gianluigi Nuzzi, who's a broadcaster and author, and he'd written a couple of books on the Vatican, and he got a phone call early in 2012 from somebody who wanted to give him inside information. Nuzzi lives in Milan and works in Milan. He made the journey to Rome and had a number of meetings with a group of people who didn't even give him their names. But they were evidently what we call sussing him out, deciding, you know, weighing him up to see if he was could be trusted. And then he was taken finally to an empty apartment, and there waiting for him was the Pope's butler, Gabriel. And over the following weeks, the butler released more and more of highly confidential documents from the church, from the Pope's office. These were documents that were describing pedophilia, were describing fraud, all kinds of things. Nuzzi published them. And, of course, it was a very, very, very serious case. And the Vatican was seriously embarrassed, and so was the Pope. There was an effort to find out who had leaked these documents, and they did finally catch the butler and put him on trial with an IT technician. But it was absolutely clear to everybody that there were powerful people behind the butler. But the trial, once it was a sort of scripted trial, everyone there in the prosecutor and the defense, everyone wanted to make the judgment clear that the buck stopped with the butler. And he was sentenced to a prison sentence of 18 months, which was later completely reduced. And the interesting thing about it was that at the beginning, Benedict had appointed a commission of cardinals to find out who the culprit really was. And, of course, the trail led fairly quickly to the butler. And then, of course, logically, if the butler was solely responsible, which was the line that the Vatican was taken, their inquiry should have stopped there, but it didn't. And they went on and on further interviewing. And it is thought, though it can't be proved, that when they presented their final report to the Pope on December the 17th, that was the last straw which led to his resignation.
That was the red dossier.
The red dossier, that there were there were groups of cardinals behind this whole strategy. As one of our interviewees said, you know, the butler was releasing documents in languages he didn't understand. But what was so extraordinary, the documents that were released were all specifically important. It wasn't just somebody picking up a pile of paper. Somebody had gone through the files very carefully and knew that these and these and these were the critical documents. It's an extraordinary story.
I was thinking as I watched this film, Anthony, that in this modern climate, with the way the media work and with technology, it seems as if even an organization like the Catholic Church and the Vatican within the Catholic Church can never be as secret again as it has been historically.
No, that's the problem, and we must never be misled into thinking that all these things happened very recently. They've been going on for centuries. Not the Vatican Bank, but a lot of this behavior has been going on for centuries, and it's much more difficult now to keep the lid on things. And good. This is great. Let's hope that, you know, as the dear Cardinal Maradiaga says towards the end, that we have a chance now to open the window, let the fresh air in, and recover. And of course, with this wonderful new pope, that is a real possibility.
Yeah, Maradiaga essentially says everybody knew it was time for a change, but we were sort of mired in the old ways of doing things.
That's right. That's right. And so, I mean, this is a depressing story, but there is great hope at the end. I mean, I don't think I could have made this film if I'd been asked to do it, you know, when Benedict was still pope, because it's such a dark story. And it's lovely for me to be able in the final act to point to a future, even though there are problems and even though there are difficulties and even though things are not that certain, that it will be a complete new beginning. But there is an enormous amount of hope.
The administrator of the Vatican Bank was arrested, which is unprecedented for someone at that level.
Yes, I know. That happened. We didn't actually bring that up in the film, but that happened a few months ago. Yeah. Cipriani.
So, talk about this. There are people who are concerned about, frankly, the safety of Pope Francis, because he has also, in addition to challenging things within the church that are wrong, he has been a great critic of global capitalism.
Yes, he has. I don't think that would lead him into any danger. I think he really is, in his political views, he's emerging as a great world statesman, and his critique is very, very important. This magistrate that we quote in the film, who's concerned for Pope Francis's safety, that's in reference to the Vatican Bank, because a lot of very, very dubious people, including mafia members, including the government of Iran, were using the Vatican Bank for all sorts of purposes. And when you mess around with people's money in that way and you close their accounts, they get very angry.
Previous efforts to reform the Vatican Curia have all failed. What do you think is different about what's happening under Francis?
I think a lot of things. And I think one of the main things, again, is publicity. I think the fact that so much of this has got out in the open now, thanks to VatiLeaks, thanks to other things, and thanks to, let's be clear, there's a very, very capable group of journalists who operate as Vatanistas, those who are covering the Vatican, mostly Catholics, mostly devout Catholics, and they're very concerned for the future of their church, and they don't let this sort of nonsense go unreported. So I think it's this increasing openness that is so important and which we haven't had before.
Is there a new sense within the church that devout Catholics should not only feel open to criticize the church, but that they have an obligation to criticize the church, in the same way that within a democracy we say that, you know, citizens have an obligation to criticize what is not right within their governments?
Absolutely. I think particularly here in the United States, there's a very strong feeling of that, that, you know, if there is a wrong, you identify it. And you know, so many people who are involved with either lawyers and working to take the diocese to task for child abuse are devout Catholics themselves, and this is a wonderful thing. And the other wonderful thing is that, and all this film, talking to people who'd been abused, talking to people who'd been following corrupt financial deals, and all the rest of them, who are all Catholic. And their faith is not shaken. Their faith is still clear. What is also clear is in their mind is the Vatican is operating in a very improper way. But it's the faith is there. I only met one person out of all the survivors and all the people who are reporting on conditions in the bank and the rest of it, only one person who has left the Catholic Church as a consequence. Most of those people who are really shaking the tins and criticizing are devout Catholics themselves.
Filmmaker Anthony Thomas is director of the frontline presentation Secrets of the Vatican, which airs Tuesday, February 25th on KERA Channel 13 television. Anthony, a really interesting piece of work, and thank you so much for making time to talk to us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's much appreciated.